Welcome to the TikTok Podcast. The clock is always ticking, so let's synchronize our watches and dive in. I'm your host, Callie Brigham, and I'm here to help you make time for what matters. Hey, friends. Welcome to this Friday bonus episode that I have been thinking about how to describe what I feel like is going to happen. And obviously, I never know what's going to happen in a podcast episode, but what I do know for sure is that this is going to be a critical conversation. Yeah. This is going to be a conversation that shines light, that helps us understand ourselves and others, helps us learn, helps us be better. And when I thought about what I wanted this podcast to be, I envisioned these Friday episodes because I envisioned having a chat with someone who was able to bring out new thoughts, new feelings, new perspectives in a way that resonated with people that maybe they didn't even know they needed. And I knew I couldn't do that on my own. And that's why we have these Friday bonus episodes. So you guys, here today is a new friend of mine. And that's the other cool part about it is these friendships that we're making across the country through this. And I can't wait to connect her with you. And vice versa, Jana Fuchs, she is a soul coach. What a great title. I think I might have to steal that at some point, Jana. She's a soul coach for busy moms raising uniquely wired kids. She hails from a long and rewarding background as a licensed psychotherapist and is an expert in helping. Are you ready? Raise your hand if this is you, stressed out super moms. Okay, yeah, we're both raising our hands. Jana's raising her hand. I'm raising my hand, Jana. And guess what? She's going to help us do become our own healers to getting to the core of our limiting beliefs, igniting self-care with confidence, and leveraging strength in community. Let me tell you just a couple more things about her before I officially welcome her. She's the host of a globally acclaimed podcast, She Illuminated. So we're going to link to all this in the show notes. You can check it out on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, of course. Her favorite title, however, and the hardest title and the best title is Mom. To her two incredible kids, one of whom is gifted, autistic, and has ADHD. Jana has witnessed the evolution of countless clients due to their commitment to themselves, their willingness to embrace imperfection, and the resilience of the human spirit. Please welcome to this critical conversation, my friend, Jana Fuchs. Welcome.
Wow. What an intro. Kelly, thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Let's do this. So, Jana, just so everybody knows a little background.
Sure.
We are, and I am in a podcast community where we support each other and help each other. And I made a request because I wanted to have this platform here for maybe some women that listen to the show and think, you know, I hear what you're saying, Callie, but I have another side of me. There's a piece to me that just doesn't quite click with some of the things. Mm. And I thought maybe a woman who experiences, whether she is diagnosed in this way or not, but experiences maybe some ADHD or some of the traits of that might need a lens in which to look through this, might need a tool, might need a like, girl, you're good. You're okay. And I didn't know how to do that myself. And you were the referral, Jana, and I could not be more pleased that we're going to get to learn from you today. So let's go, girl. Let's go. Tell us, I guess, just a little bit about you and your journey and how we're sitting here today together.
Yeah, well, let me roll up my sleeves.
One of those. Okay, I got my notebook. I'm ready.
So a little bit about my journey. Well, in the way that it pertains to my, first, let me start with the ADHD piece. And I don't know if you want me to say a little bit about the work that I do and how my ADHD kind of comes into that and how it kind of plays out and how I manage it. But I can kind of break it down for you by starting with how ADHD manifested when I was younger, but I didn't know that I had it. And this is the story that you probably have heard with various friends that you have, with family members, with women specifically. Because back in the 80s, and I am, you know, I was an 80s child. And so back then, you know, girls were not, they did not frequently get a diagnosis of ADHD because it was thought that the H part, the hyperactivity part, and back then it was just called ADD, but, you know, the neuropsychologists who did the testing were often looking for that hyperactivity component, right? And girls, now there's sometimes exceptions to this, but girls are not typically the ones who are bouncing off the walls, right? Boys, you know, tend to be more on the hyperactive side. So it's not always so obvious with girls. Girls are also very clever in finding ways to cope by using, it's not, they don't do this consciously, but subconsciously, they kind of like cover up their symptoms. You know, some people call it masking, and they find these like brilliant strategies to get themselves through. But often there can be this feeling of, I don't know why this thing is so much harder for me, or frustration because, you know, in my case, I sensed that I was smart, but it was harder for me to organize myself, to get started on a project, to know how to set myself up, the sequential steps to take. And I think, you know, I think I felt a sense of shame, if I'm being totally honest, that I couldn't, I think I was embarrassed to say to a teacher or a parent, you know, this thing feels harder for me than it does for my peers. And, you know, so I just, even as I say that now, I wish I could go back in time and say to myself, you know, it's you're smart. It's not that you're not smart. It's that your brain is literally wired differently. And there are so many things that exist that can help to support you. And P.S., you're one out of like every five people who has this. So some sort of, well, a neurodivergence occurs in about one out of every five. So that would have felt helpful to me to know back then. And I wasn't diagnosed with ADHD until I was 42 years old. I'm about to turn 45. So yes, I guess I'll stop here and just say, yeah, I kind of give you a chance to come in. But yeah, that's the ADHD part.
Well, first, I don't want you to stop because I'm hanging on every word. And, okay. But I think, I will just say, this is why I wanted you here, Jana. I think that there are women, and very, very fascinating that it manifests itself differently for men and for women, that have felt those same exact things and have had that shame, have had that embarrassment, have had that frustration, and they think there's something wrong with them. And that comparison game is so deadly.
Yeah.
And it's also probably stopped them from really fully living out professionally or personally, or things that they can probably do. You can do some things like that, they're superpowers.
Yes. Yes.
And
yes.
Maybe they're limiting themselves there. So, all right, let's talk about how you got diagnosed, what that experience was like.
Sure.
Because
sure.
I think that's the key.
Sure. Yeah. So my son, when he starting around 3 years old, he started developing some real kind of like typical ADHD boy presentation behavior. So he was the kid who he was constantly covered in, like, you know, black and blue marks on his legs. And, you know, he was always like bumping into things, and he was just kind of like wild, but a lot of fun. And, you can't test a child for ADHD. You shouldn't anyway, for the most part. Sometimes there's exceptions until they're at least about 6 years old. And the reason for that is because sometimes younger kids, it's not at all uncommon for young kids to be rambunctious, right? And they really kind of aren't able to gauge against like an average relative degree of quote, normal until they're about 6 years old when they can start to regulate themselves a little bit better. And so starting from the time my son was three, because I was a psychotherapist and I kind of, you know what to look for. I remember saying to my husband, if this kid, I know we have to wait another 3 years to actually formally get him tested, but if he does not have ADHD, please revoke my license. Because I am telling you right now, it's like so classic. And sure enough, when he was 6 years old, he got the diagnosis like right away. We were also told that he is extremely gifted intellectually. And I will say that we knew that he was smart, but he was also struggling to learn how to read. And he was in the middle of second grade. We really didn't want to start him on medication because, you know, it's kind of like you have to kind of come to terms with the fact that do I want to give my kid a stimulant? How do I feel about that? What are all the side effects? Like, how long is he going to need to stay on it? Ultimately, we found that if we didn't give him the stimulant, it was going to be exceedingly difficult for him to just even learn how to read, right? And that's like the foundation for everything else. So we ultimately, quote, bit the bullet. We found an amazing doctor and we started him on a teeny tiny dose of a stimulant. And when I tell you, his reading took off almost instantaneously. And his teacher said to us, in her 20 years of teaching, she has never witnessed such a rapid transformation. Now, I will say, being a psychotherapist, I had suspected for many, many years that I had ADHD because I tend to exhibit, I'm, like I said, not so much hyperactive, but sometimes I kind of can be daydreamy or I have trouble getting organized, right? Like, how long did it take me to send you my sheet back in, my Google Doc with my summary, right? Like, it's still,
No judgment.
It never goes away, right? But it's something that I manage. What I'm getting at is that the change that I witnessed in my child when he started on that medication, in addition to helping to support with the executive functioning piece, which is a process that helps us to plan and organize and execute. Once I kind of saw the collaboration between those two things supporting him, the combination of those two things, I was like, I think it's getting harder and harder for me to naturally manage mine with my long implemented coping strategies. I think it's time I get an evaluation. And it was so validating. Yeah. Yeah. So I will say that this is not at all, my story is not unique. This story is echoed throughout, you know, the voices of so many women, because I talk to a lot of people in my field, and also on my podcast, and yeah, it's really, really common. So yeah, I'll stop here because I want to give you a chance to ask questions.
Yeah. I love that word validating. And that's really, I think, what I want to stamp on today's podcast. If there's one word. So Jana, like you said, this obviously is your individual experience. And at the same time, it's so common. So would you tell us like a few of the things, whether it's the behaviors or the coping or the things that you were doing without even realizing it or experiencing it, so that maybe there's somebody listening that, I mean, they're going to start checking some things off and say, okay, wow, I just thought that was me. So describe a few of those things for us.
Yeah, well, the first thing I will say, and you know, I don't want to get too tangential with this, hormones for women approaching 40 and from, and really from 40 leading into menopause, like brain fog can also increase, right? It's kind of that like premenopausal, menopausal brain that kind of starts to kick into action, into high gear. And that can also mimic effects of ADHD. And so that's just something to keep in mind. And I'm actually going to be doing a podcast soon with an NP who specializes in all of this and women's hormones.
Gianna, I have a guest lined up who's going to be sharing about this too. How crazy is that? Because I mean, you're right. These are the inner workings. We can't see this on the outside. Look at us on the outside. We don't know.
Right.
We've got to address what's going on the inside.
And there's so much new information coming out that our moms didn't know, right? Everyone just thought, oh, you get some hot flashes and you move on, right? And there are so many changes that happen in these years. And so I'm sorry if you're still in your 30s and you're like, this doesn't apply to me. Just wait, it will.
File this one away. This is episode 49. You'll go back and you'll hear it. That's right.
So, in any event, so I will say in terms of behaviors that I was noticing in myself that I was like, okay, I need help with this. Like I've coped very well, right? Like I'm a pretty high functioning person. I got it together in school. I went to a good college. I went to like a really, you know, highly esteemed graduate program. But when I starting around like 39, 40, like I started, it was almost like my short-term memory was more impacted, just like more forgetfulness and things I wouldn't normally forget. For example, I went grocery shopping, got a bunch of things, picked up, you know, some milk, came home. It was nighttime, went to go make breakfast for the kids the next morning, went to take out the milk. And I was like, I could have sworn I bought milk. Like, what? And then I was like, oh, shoot. I hope I didn't leave any groceries in the car. And sure enough, went out to the car and there was still a bag of groceries in the backseat with milk, now spoiled. And it like kind of freaked me out, right? And we all forget things sometimes, you know, like where I put the car keys, where I put my phone, right? But an entire bag of groceries, right? And that's just like, that wasn't like a one-off kind of things like that were happening to me more frequently. So I will say short-term memory was something that was impacted. A couple of times. So I had never ever as a psychotherapist, I had never double booked an appointment. Like I've always been really good with that. Twice in a year, I double booked. And I was mortified, right? Because I value my professionalism and I felt awful. Like one of my clients had to go home and then, you know, accommodate coming in later. And, you know, of course I comped the session, but I was mortified, right? And I was like, okay, I need to kind of like look into this. And seeing my son's, like I said earlier, his success was actually what inspired me to know that help is there and it can make a huge difference if you get the right kind of help. So those were some of my behaviors and coping strategies I could absolutely get into if you'd like me to.
Yeah, let's absolutely do that. And so really just to clarify, mm-hmm. you're not talking about a one-off. You're not talking about mm-hmm. where we all have those days that, you know, things just got crazy. You can start to tell this is habitual. This is not something that you want to just overlook and dismiss. Like this was starting to be something that you knew needed to be addressed.
Right. And one differential point that I want to make, which your question just prompted me to make, is that ADHD, it's not one of these diagnoses like anxiety, where it can pop up at any time in someone's lifetime, even if there's no previous history, and then suddenly you have ADHD. That's not really how it works. One of the defining criterion is that you need to have had the majority of symptoms that are required in the diagnostic statistical manual since childhood. So, you know, things like executive functioning issues, like I mentioned, you know, having trouble getting organized, planning, executing, impulse control issues, which means basically like you might have the tendency to blurt something out or interrupt somebody, right? And that's why even today on your podcast, I'm kind of stopping myself and I want to make sure that I'm giving you airtime or that I'm not interrupting you, right? Because I know that I can kind of sometimes have that tendency. So I have learned to watch for it and to be mindful of the other person. Yeah, so I, looking back, knew that I had had a lot of these symptoms present since childhood.
So it's really, you know, also being reflective too. Yeah, I was going to say, it's also being reflective of, has this been habitual in my life? And maybe was it something that no one really knew how to address when I was younger? Or it was something that it's just how she is.
Yeah.
Maybe in your family, you were labeled like this one was this one and this one was, and you were the forgetful one or whatever, but you can look back and see those things. That's what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as a kid, I was probably, you know, I never felt truly labeled, but I did feel, you know, I felt like my older brother could just like show up in class, barely take any notes, and just like ace his tests, right? I was a good student, but I had to study really hard and I had to learn like strategies, like how to take notes, how to, you know, highlight in a textbook and know like which things are going to make, you know, matter the most on the test. Like I had to like learn how to study. Right. I mean, that's a whole thing in and of itself. It doesn't just come naturally to a lot of kids, especially kids who have ADHD. And so I think my personality was like, I was very capable in many ways of many things. But I just think my parents thought that I was a really outgoing, fun loving kid who loved gymnastics and loved socializing. And, you know, that was me.
And all of that was true. And yes. Also, you were having to learn how to do things that were difficult.
Yes.
And start to, I'm sure it's exhausting as well. So let's get into the how of this now. You know, how do we start to incorporate some of these strategies or these tools? What are some of the things that you've seen that have really helped you?
Yeah.
Stay focused, stay on track.
Yeah. So I will say, I was really nervous to take any sort of medication, really nervous, because as I've gotten older, like so many of us women experience, sleeping a full uninterrupted 8 hours felt harder. Right. Like sometimes, you know, you're in mom go mode all day, work go mode. And suddenly, even though I was tired, like physically really tired and felt like I was just going to fall asleep in 2 seconds, sometimes my mind just wouldn't shut off. And so I was apprehensive to go ahead and take something that could potentially keep me up even later. Right. And I am cautious because stimulants can be addicting. Right. And I didn't want to just willy-nilly it. And so I made sure to find a doctor who I knew like specialized in ADHD, was really well versed and would take my concerns seriously and partner with me to figure it out. And ultimately, that's what I did. And I found a dose. I tend to be sensitive to medication. So all I really need is a teeny little bit to make a big difference. And it doesn't keep me up. So I'm glad I gave myself permission to kind of get over that hump. But then in terms of like what I do non-medication wise, I have a few things that help. The first is coffee in the morning, a cup of coffee, not 10, but a cup of coffee, and then exercise. So for me and for so many of us, not just ADHD women, right? But whether it's walking, going for a jog, I'm trying now as I approach 45 to get more into weightlifting because that's what all the research says is the best for us. But exercise is one of the best ways for me to focus myself and clear out all the cobwebs that my body and my brain are holding on to. And whenever I do that, I am a morning exercise person. If I don't do it in the morning, probably not going to happen. When I do that, the rest of my day just like sails by and I am so much better, so much better. And if the byproduct is like my jeans look a little bit better, great. But that's not really like the thing. The thing is, it is just as much a part of my mental health as is taking the medicine, as is, you know, having my own coach/therapist, right? These are all parts of what help me. Another coping strategy is I have multiple different places where I check in with myself with my running to-do list. Because when you have ADHD, it can feel very much like instead of making a to-do list with like, the order of priority going from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like if you're thinking vertically down, right? Say in the note section of your phone. When you have ADHD, it's almost as if everything is horizontal, like that to-do list is hard, like everything feels equally urgent. And so that's why in some ways, I think Kayla, you made this point earlier that it can, I just lost my thought. It can feel like, a superpower in some ways. So, right, like I have 10 things I have to do and I'm going to try and do them all really well. And I'm going to try and do them all at the same time. And the fact is you learn over time, like you might kind of be able to do them all at the same time, but none of them are going to be done that well. So I keep learning that lesson over and over again, and I'm getting better and better, right? But what I have found really helps is going to the note section of my phone in the pinned and pinning the note. So it comes up as the top note and writing out all those things that seem on a horizontal level of importance on the same plane. I just brain dump. I write them all out vertically. And then I go back and I say, okay, which three things absolutely need to get done today, or I will really be in deep doo-doo, or I won't be able to sleep. And I move those three things, I copy and paste, and I move those three things up to the top, I'm sorry, cut and paste, and I put them in bold so that my eye is drawn just to those things. And to give me some more breathing room so I don't stress about the other things, I'll put some space, like literal, just like space in the notes in between those top three bold things and all the rest of the things. And what I'll do is I'll look at the rest of my week and then I'll do the same thing, but for tomorrow. So I'm like, okay, so what needs to be done today and then tomorrow, right? And so it's always three things, no more. And if I happen to get through those three things really quickly, then I'll borrow something from tomorrow if I want to, or I might just say, that's it. I don't need to be more productive today, right? My value does not live with running as fast as I can, contrary to what our society tells us, right? I am inherently worthy of rest, of socializing, of relaxation, of joy in and of itself. That's it. So it really just depends on my day that day. And I will just finally say on that note, not just leaving joy for the last minute if I have time, but carving out conscious time for joy where I do not plan anything else. So that could look like Fridays is usually a great day for me to do that, where I'll either walk with a friend or get lunch with a friend, right? While the kids are in school. It's a little harder in the beginning of the week, but I can usually make it happen at least somewhere between Thursday or Friday. So, and then starting my day with exercise, like I said. So those are just some of the ways that I have learned to manage it.
So are these ways that you learned by trial and error, or did someone suggest these? You know, if somebody's listening and they're like, do I just need to try a few different things that work for me?
Yeah.
Or is there a template? Like, is there already systems in place that somebody could just borrow if they're not feeling rather creative, or they're like, I need some help today, Jana, and I don't to try these things.
There are, first of all, there are coaches who specifically, I'm just throwing this out there, and you don't have to work with a coach, obviously, but if you really want some like one-on-one kind of help, like scaffolding some of this stuff, there are executive functioning coaches, or you could look up executive functioning coaches on Google, or you could look up ADHD coaches. Like, there are people who, like, this is their entire line of work, and they will help you to come up with systems that work for you. Sometimes you're not going to know what works best for you until you try a bunch of different things. It's like, you know, throwing a bunch of mud at the wall and seeing what sticks. And you're not going to know until you, it's like trial and error. But then also there's a couple, you know, more than a couple, there's tons of books out there, tons of information. But off the top of my head, two good ones. One is ADHD 2.0. And the other is a book called Smart But Scattered. And those are two really good places to start, where, you know, you can get all sorts of ideas and suggestions.
This is really affirming for me as well. And I know I would say that I don't think that I have a lot of the characteristics of somebody with ADHD, but I have a lot of the characteristics of someone who is driven, who finds it hard to take a break, who is always trying to do a lot of things at one time. My list tends to be everything needs to get done Monday morning. And if it doesn't, then I'm behind. Right. And so I'm a work in progress in that too. And I love where you said that we're worthy of rest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Busy isn't always better, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. And, you know, people in this country especially make themselves sick over how productive they feel they need to be, right? I'll put it like this. For every emotion that we experience, we have a paired physiological response. And so when you think about that, if you are consistently existing in a state of stress because you feel like you can never take your foot off the gas, you're going to have all sorts of health issues. And not to mention potential mental health issues, right? Like, you could develop an anxiety disorder. You could develop depression. You could develop tons of inflammation in the body and have autoimmune stuff. You could have migraines. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And we really live in this hustle culture that if you're good at hustling and you kind of thrive off of that, which I do too. Like, I do. I like being busy. I've always kind of run from one thing to the next. That's kind of part of my personality. But I really have to watch that, because there's a fine line between enjoying the kind of like hustle bustle of life, but then burning out. And managing a normal, healthy amount of stress is one thing. But when that stress accumulates and becomes so big, sometimes we're not even aware of it. And we don't take the time to complete the stress cycle. And that's what I'm talking about in terms of the exercise, right? Or doing something fun with a friend, or gardening, something that's like meditative, or doing actual meditation, right? We need to complete the stress cycle in order to not have us, you know, like go on that burnout express, you know, where that's a dangerous place to be.
It is a dangerous place to be. And there seems to be a culture that there's almost a hierarchy, right? Of women that are burning the candle at both ends. And if there's anything I've been learning in these last month and weeks of doing this, it is the honor of caring for yourself well and of having that margin. And it is, I mean, we could be as dramatic as we want to, but it could be a matter of life and death. And so to really incorporate that in our schedule, just like we would anything else.
Yes.
So I have a feeling that my listeners are going to want to continue connecting with you. Let's talk about that. How, and I'll put this in the show notes too. Tell us again about your podcast, your website, what they can do so that they can further getting to know you and what you're about.
Sure. So, and something I haven't talked about yet, and I'll just mention it briefly here, is the work that I specifically do as a coach is I am a soul coach for women who are raising kids with ADHD and or autism. And I got into this work because it is coming directly from my lived experience as a mother raising a child who is both autistic and has ADHD and is gifted and incredible and amazing and the sweetest and like so lovely and empathic and affectionate and all the things. But that is really kind of like my way of kind of giving back and like having an impact that actually really is needed and means something. And moms like me need other moms who get the nuanced struggles and the concerns and the worries and the fears. Like moms like us really need community. And that's where my coaching really kind of thrives, is bringing together communities of women in my workshops, in my summits, in my group coaching programs. I do also do some private one-on-one coaching. And then I still see a few therapy clients on the side here in Illinois. But my online coaching is available internationally, and you can go online to www.janafuchscoaching.com, and you can book a free discovery call with me there. It's 30 minutes long. It costs nothing, just to see if, you know, we would be a good fit and to answer any questions that, you know, you might have. Oh, you can also, if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's at Jana Fuchs Coaching.
Perfect. Jana, would there be anything else that you would want to say to the woman who's listening, who maybe is in your position? She might now just be discovering that there are some added tools she's going to need to add that maybe somebody else doesn't need, but they're going to serve her. Or maybe the woman that's known for a long time that she has, or shout out to my couple guys that listen, or that have ADHD. Is there something else? Is there anything else that you want to leave in them, with them today? Whether it's an encouragement, whether it's a tip you forgot, what do you want? What do you want to say to them?
Yeah. So, you know, what I want to say is regarding labels. Back to the labels thing. I don't put a lot of stock in labels. I think the only reason in my world that we have labels as a psychotherapist is because it just helps us, number one, to help people get reimbursement from insurance, but also so that from a treatment planning perspective, we kind of know what we're dealing with. Other than that, like, you are an entire person, and the label is just something that the therapist needs or the doctor needs, whatever. But really, that's it. And you do not, you know, some people self-identify, right? And they don't necessarily ever seek out a diagnosis for one reason or another. And that's okay. Like, that's a very personal decision. And if the label doesn't sit well with you, or it feels stigmatizing, or you don't believe in the label, whatever it is, like, that's okay. But you don't have to have a formal diagnosis to start getting help, right? You can pick up those books I mentioned. Again, it's ADHD 2.0 and Smart But Scattered. There's tons of podcasts out there. You can work with an executive functioning coach. You do not need a diagnosis to do any of those things. You will need a diagnosis to get a prescription for medication. So I just want to, make that point. And the other part of my message to you is you are so not alone. And ADHD in many ways is can actually be like a really cool thing to have. We tend to be more creative than the average person. We tend to be more social. We can be like the life of the party. And sometimes depending on, if we can find the bumpers around our race car brains to drive the car, we can do some really amazing things. And we can do multiple things at once, just not like 100, maybe like, 2 or 3. So, yeah.
I was going to say, and those three things are in bold. And yep. They're at the top.
Yes. Yes.
And then there's space and then everything else.
Yes.
And, one last thing. I remember when we chatted just to see if we were a fit. And we are. Mm-hmm. I remember you said something about also writing it in your own handwriting. Do you remember that? I know this is
Yes.
Came to me. Share that quick tip too.
Yeah. So, it's funny because sometimes, and actually I'm glad you prompted me for that. Sometimes what feels like it works really well 1 week, the next week, it's like not sticking as much, and who knows why, right? I mean, but I will say, whenever I feel that way, when I'm like, okay, this vertical list with the three things in bold at the top, like for some reason this week, like I'm just not checking it as much, so I'm missing things. When I then recognize that that's happening, I will write it in my own handwriting, because the act of putting something in your own handwriting, it's something about encoding it into my brain in a way, right? Like I had to write that. Right. And the actual physical movement gets imprinted in my brain in a different way than just the type, right? The font. They've done variations of all types of research on this, right? With like the students at Harvard in the 1970s who are asked to write their goals down, for the next however many years. And the ones who actually took the time to do it had accomplished those goals versus the students who didn't. And there's something about writing those things down in your handwriting. So highly encourage that as well.
I loved that too. And that's why I take a lot of notes. So it's imprinted on me, Dana. You're imprinted on me from now on.
And love it.
I am so glad. And I just want to thank you. And I also want, so all of what Jana talked about is going to be in the show notes. So you can connect with her and find her. And just a quick reminder to my listeners, I have my brain drain principle too that you could also put on there. It's the same concept, Jana. On Sundays, I have everybody just brain drain it all. I say brain drain instead of brain dump. I just like alliteration and rhyming and whatever. And so we do it all, get it out. And then they transfer that to the most important things for that day.
Yes.
So same concept, whether you want to write it, type it, same thing.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So Jana, I have a gift for you, my new friend, and it's a pretend gift.
I'll take it.
The gift is the idea of an extra hour, a bonus hour that you do not have to take out of any other hours of your day. What, my friend, would you do with your bonus hour?
I would choose something from my list, and right, you have the brain drain. I have a bliss list, which is kind of, it's a list of all the potential things. It's a menu of options of things that make me feel good. And I would pick something off of that list and do that for an hour. And on different days, depending on whatever it is that I might be feeling inspired by or wanting to call in more of, I would choose something off that menu so that I don't have to do the extra work of thinking, well, what do I do with this hour? It's always there and I can just pick something from it. Yeah.
Okay, I'm stealing that.
Bliss. Steal it. Steal Bliss. It.
Stolen. It's stolen. Well, my prayer for you in that is that this next week that you would find that hour and you would pull something off of that bliss list and that you would remember what an impact that you're making on others and how much of a value that your story is to everyone listening.
Thank you, Kelly. You are such a sweetheart and so very, very genuine and so easy to be with and talk to. And I just want to say a huge, huge, wholehearted thank you for having me on your beautiful show. And if you, I will just shamelessly plug one more time that if any of your listeners relate to my story in terms of, you know, if you're a mom who you yourself are neurodivergent, meaning that you have ADHD, or if you're autistic, or if you have dyslexia, right? These are all kind of parts of the same area of the brain that, you know, certain processes feel more cumbersome for us. So if you are in that kind of a situation and you are raising a child who is in that kind of a situation and you feel alone or you want some more ideas or resources, you can also just for free check out my podcast again, which is called She Illuminated. And I think hopefully you will feel a little less alone and hopefully a little more inspired. So, yeah.
And that's what it's about. It's about connecting. It's about being there for people. That community is vital for us.
Now
my listeners get to be part of a bigger one. And thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. My absolute pleasure. Thank you, Kelly.
Well, I look forward to getting to know you more, Jana. I look forward to my listeners getting to collaborate with you and learn more as well. And so thank you guys for being here today on our bonus episode. We'll see you next time. God bless. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining me on the TikTok podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and leave a 5-star review. Your feedback fuels our mission to help you master your time. Set your alarm for our next episode, and until then, make every moment count.